Perfect timing. That was a good walk. Thank you.
They've got a dude on here named Macintosh. Isn't that cool? Oh. Or maybe I shouldn't say dude. I don't know. I don't know if anyone.
Hi, Cheryl.
I shouldn't say dude because pronouns are they.
Hi, everyone. It is 1 o'clock. Happy Friday to all of you. Thank you for hopping on for today's EAP training on compassion fatigue. Before I turn it over to Cheryl, if you wouldn't mind just putting your first and last name in the chat box, we do take attendance, so that would be very helpful. And then at the start of the chat box, I did put a link to a survey for a professional development feedback form. If you can find that and fill that out later on, that would be great. I'll try to paste it in there again towards the end if I can get to the chat box as Cheryl's finishing up. So. Without further ado, I am going to pass it over to Cheryl, who's facilitating our training today.
Great. Welcome, Cheryl. Good afternoon, everybody. And just wondered if you were going to be able to do that shared thing as well.
Yep, I sure can. I'll get it pulled up here.
Okay. So we've got an hour blocked. I would say this probably takes a good 45 minutes. And I like to do everything in a casual fashion. So, you know, somebody's got questions and you want to, you know, throw it out there. I'm fine with that. So I think, you know, compassion fatigue is the topic and we could probably have a 3 or 4 hour discussion on it. But hopefully there will be some information today that will sort of have you rethink, relook at your role and how it's affecting you on a personal note, as well as a professional. I've been in the business since 1986, and there's been definitely times where I've sort of had to step back and regroup. And then there's other times where things, you know, are just flooding at you. It's coming at you so quick. You just got to take like a day off. So, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. I think sometimes we're hard on ourselves, recognizing how to take care of ourselves at times. So just think about that. As we're going through the materials, think about you and how your job affects you and how you handle, you know, that stress. I talk to a lot of employees throughout the year, you know, and I think a lot of times when we're stressed, we bring it home and we sort of dump it. I had a woman not too long ago who said, you know, I'm yelling at my kids more than I've ever done before, which is typical. You know, I can relate to that. So again, it's recognizing some of those signs, and that's part of this handout, and being able to say to yourself, I need to step back and figure out, you know, how I need to take care of me or my family, or, you know, the stress of the job. So, and use format the next slide, correct? Okay, perfect. I'll just give you the cue, I guess, when we're done with one slide, if that's okay. So Figley sort of defined compassion fatigue, and I think this is probably the best definition I've ever seen. We have not been directly exposed to the trauma scene, but we hear the story told with such intensity, and we hear similar stories so often, we have the gift and curse of extreme empathy. And I think a lot of people drawn to this business are very empathetic people. And sometimes it's hard to sort of draw that line and step back. We feel the feelings of our clients. We experience their fears. We dream their dream. Eventually we lose a certain part of optimism, humor, and hope. We get tired. We aren't sick, but we aren't ourselves. And sometimes this doesn't happen, you know, initially when you're first in the field, you got all that energy and spark to, you know, cure the world. But, you know, then it comes with different kind of traumas or experiences. And sometimes if we've had traumas in our life, and now we are being visited with a client with maybe similar kind of things, it sort of is a double whammy. So next slide, please. So Carla Joinson really defined compassion fatigue in 1992, which when you think about it, isn't that long ago. And she really discovered how, you know, when you're in that kind of a helping profession, and it's not just social work, it can be law enforcement, it can be prison work, a lot of different kind of, you know, first responders, all those kind of folks. You know, it really affects how you see the world. And the length of being a worker in this role, again, can really, you can begin to see, you know, poor sleep habits, poor eating habits, When I worked at the hospital, and actually I did a compassion fatigue training, I came back and I, you know, was observant to the environment and realized how overweight so many people were. And I think, again, that's that anxiety where, you know, you tend to eat. And I've been guilty of that myself. Depression, anger, irritability. I've had employees that love their job, but then they find themselves referred to me in a job jeopardy because they've lost it on the job. They've gotten angry. They've maybe made a comment or, you know, done something that was really not professional. So again, those are all symptoms to pay attention to. You know, if we can be a little bit more cued into how we're feeling before something actually happens, I would say that's a positive. And that's why I'm here to help you guys. So, you know, if you're having a bad week, feel like you need to talk to somebody, please don't hesitate to call. You know, that's my role and I'm happy to do that for you. Compassion. Did somebody say something? Okay. So compassion fatigue is really the cost of caring. And it's emotional, it's physical. You might find that you have a backache, you know, headache, all those kind of symptoms can come up. And it's really putting ourselves in a place where we're dealing with second traumatic response. We haven't experienced it. We're experiencing it through someone else. But again, I do want to stress that if you've had trauma in your life and you're now working with someone that may be similar to experiences you have, that's going to be even more heavier on you. So it's important to keep that in mind if there's things that you need to do to take care of yourself. Next slide, please. So who does it affect? It affects a lot of different people. Who is vulnerable to compassion fatigue and what type of work setting, under what types of conditions, and how can it be treated, and how can you get yourself back to a normal, comfortable place with your life? Next slide, please. So anyone that's in a caregiving role could be exposed to compassion fatigue and feel it. It could be people in the hospital setting, doctor's office, medical emergency, substance abuse, mental health, social and educational workers, police, security, first responders, corrections and welfare employees. And again, when you guys look at all the different roles that you have at the agency, I'm guessing that more of you than not are exposed to these kind of situations with your clients. Anybody working in a traumatic setting definitely has exposure to this. And anytime you're working with other people, again, depending on what's going on in their lives, can expose you to some pretty difficult situations. So I worked with hospice for a while, long, long time ago now. But I remember going over to a family's house where the father was dying and the siblings were there and they were arguing. And, you know, he was trying to calm everything down and he was the one that was sick. And, you know, being an outsider, you can just do so much, but you do take that on and try to, you know, do some resolution to what the issues are. And it can just be really hard because you don't always know the dynamics going on. So I remember leaving there exhausted after that. So next slide, please. So these employees have the difficult task of showing compassion to those who suffer, but not becoming too personally involved. You know, it's having those healthy boundaries. And it's probably something when you look at boundaries at work with clientele or even other coworkers is, you know, what does that look like for you? And so sometimes that's stuff that has to happen between our ears. You know, we have to look at what that boundary is that's going to help us be effective and, you know, do what we need to do. Burnout is real. It's sort of, for me, when you look at compassion fatigue, that's the beginning of the process. Burnout is a little bit more exaggerated if you haven't taken care of yourself. And now you can actually say, I'm burned out. I can't do this anymore. I remember when I was at Western, I had a professor who, social work professor, loved him, got to be good friends with him. But he had shared with us that, you know, he was a social worker out in Philadelphia for like 20 years and just burned out and ended up buying a motorcycle shop. And he did that for about 4 years and then he came back to teaching. So, you know, sometimes we have to do those things to sort of regroup for our own well-being. So everyone feels stress. Life is stressful, work stressful. Heaven knows right now with COVID and, you know, Ukraine thing going on, it's stressful. And it's really trying to look at, you know, how we can take care of our caseload and our people and also take care of ourselves. It really means emphasizing with your clients, you know, trying to do the best that you can do, but also step back and realize that that boundary has to be there for you as well. Too often, I think we ignore what we need to do to be okay. And it could be, you know, not taking a lunch hour. It could be working overtime. It could be, you know, we're hired to do 40 hours a week and we're doing 60. Again, it's really looking at that big picture of, you know, who you are and what you're doing and where is that stress coming from. And that's not always easy to look at that. But again, I think if as we go through these materials, you're noticing 3, 4, 5 different kind of things that you know are affecting you, is to step back and say, you know, maybe I need to rethink some of this stuff. I always encourage people to take at least their lunch hours. I think if you have a half an hour, an hour, just that break mentally can help sort of restore some of that energy. So next slide. So how does it affect the common individual? It can affect us in all frames of our life, you know, work, home, relationships, you know, how we treat our pet animals, you know, how do we talk on the phone with our relatives? I mean, it has a global sort of impact if we're stressed out and you know, feeling that residue of so much stress. Next slide, please. So Piffler named Gilly wrote in the journal, and I think this is a sort of a true statement, is those who have experienced compassion fatigue describe it as being sucked into a vortex that pulls them slowly downward. And I know I've experienced that. Sometimes I will say it doesn't feel slowly. Sometimes it feels like it's happening real quickly. So, you know, again, I think that should be a hand up, a flag that you need to step back and say, you know, what do I need to do to take care of me? Again, some people don't know how to do that. And, you know, that's part of my role working with you guys, is I'm happy to help you brainstorm and talk about, or even just feel like venting can be really helpful. And so keep that in mind. Next slide. So this is what it looks like. Okay. These are some of the symptoms, and there's a lot. Doesn't mean you're going to experience all of them. But, you know, again, I think if you're experiencing 4, 5, 6, you know, it may be time to really look at, you know, some self-care kind of things that you need to do. So bottled up emotions, excessive blaming, isolation from others. Maybe you used to like to ski and, you know, the last couple of years you haven't done that. Receives unusual amount of complaints from others. Maybe a coworker is saying, gee, you're not as happy as you used to be, or, you know, maybe you're grumpy or something. And while those are hard to take, those criticisms, you know, if there's some truth in it, look at it, step back and think about what you might need to do. Substance abuse. Again, if you find that, you know, you used to drink a glass of wine one night a week, or, you know, every Thursday or whatever, now you're drinking a bottle. Those are pretty significant changes. Yeah. Compulsive behaviors, overspending, overeating, gambling, sexual addictions. Again, those are flags. Poor self-care, legal problems, maybe there's financial issues, reoccurrence of nightmares or flashbacks. Those usually are pretty significant. And again, would be, you know, prompted by maybe a call or who's in your support system. Oh, yeah. You can get some help from. Next one, please. Physical ailments. Apathy, just, you know, don't feel like you like to do anything, unmotivated, problems concentrating. I've talked to several people through COVID where this is probably one of the top ones is, you know, if you're working remotely from home, and I know most of you probably have done that, you know, you sort of work, give it your all, and then all of a sudden your brain just sort of stops working. So again, it's time to maybe take a break, shift some gears. What can you do differently? Since we've been working remotely at home, as silly as this probably seems, I change places that I do my remote with just because it helps me. So sometimes it's the little things. It doesn't need to be the big things. Preoccupied with stuff, maybe denying that there's issues going on for you. Loss of hope or self-worth. Depression, anxiety, PTSD symptoms. If you've had trauma, you know, something like this could kick you into a PTSD state of being. Maybe you don't want to go to work and you don't. you know, so that absenteeism can actually put you in a position where it could put you in a job jeopardy role, and we don't want to see that happen. So changes in relationships, and I hear this a lot, especially through COVID, is, you know, now the relationship with that coworker that you thought was pretty strong and good has sort of had a flaw in it. And, you know, you maybe feel more irritated, more aggressive, don't want to talk. You know, you're in the room together, or maybe you're on you know, what we're doing today on video, and you just don't want to be involved. You don't want to participate. So those are all things that are important. And if you're really a gregarious kind of person, and, you know, you like to participate, now all of a sudden you're not, again, that's a flag. Desire to break company rules, negativism. And we all get negative at times, but, you know, how long does it last? It's something to look at and weigh, you know, is it part of who you are, or is it part of a situation? And a lot of times the people that I've talked with over the last couple years, it's really the depression, anxiety, and that feeling, that negative feeling, or that irritability, it's really situational because of the times we live in. And, you know, we've never had to do this before, and we're all learning, you know, how to handle it. So those are pretty normal. But again, I would say don't ignore them, because they can get worse. Next slide, please. Lack of flexibility with staff members, a strong reluctance towards change. If you've been through a trauma and you're trying to protect yourself, any kind of change is going to be challenging. And change is not easy for some people. And so, again, I think if there's something that you've experienced that you feel sort of stuck, you know, who in your network can you help process with? Inability to believe that there could be improvement, lack of vision for the future. You know, that's sort of all rolled into that positive versus negative piece. And again, you know, be honest with yourself. If you've been a pretty positive kind of person and now you're feeling that shift, it may mean that there's some work to do for you. It doesn't have to be in a group setting. It could be individual. I mean, I'm happy, again, to talk with folks or get you to a therapist, or sometimes it just helps venting and, you know, getting it out there. And it sort of releases all that stuff that you feel is you're holding in. So next one, please. So awareness, and some of us are good at this and some of us aren't. And so really being aware of the events and the situations and how it's affected you and your reaction to them is really important. We all have different coping mechanisms. Some are strong, some are weak, some are challenged by the events that are going on. And so it's really, you know, asking yourself, are you aware of any of these issues or contributing factors in your workday? So if you know that, you know, from the morning to when you log on to work to when you leave at night, that you're feeling really different, or really, you know, no energy, no desire, no hope, that all could be compassion fatigue, and it may be time to look at what you need to do for you, self-care kind of issues. And next one, please. So these are some of the compassion fatigue warning signs, I would say. Ability to function is interfered with or altered. So if you were high passionate, high productive, and now that's all gone, again, you know, that you probably are struggling with compassion fatigue. Situation or incident does not seem typical or ordinary. It feels traumatic. And sometimes when we've been through difficult times, we are more sensitive to events and they feel more traumatic. Compassion stress is going to impinge upon your breaks and through normal boundaries, and you're going to feel that overwhelmness. Regularly waking up tired in the morning, struggling to get to work, feeling as if you are working harder but not accomplishing anything during the day, or maybe not feeling like you're doing anything different, and still not making any headway. Becoming frustrated, irritated easily, losing compassion for the people that you're working with. If you find that you're going to, you know, going into somebody's home or having a meeting with a client and you feel that agitation sort of building up, again, that could be compassion fatigue. And next slide, please. If you're routinely bored or disgusted, if you feel illness, aches, pains, headaches, if you haven't had those things before and now they're coming on a more daily basis, that may be compassion fatigue. And one of the things, if you have it and you avoid it, it's not going to go away on its own typically. And so you're looking at that stress that accumulates over time and then puts us in a whole different ballpark. And I say this a lot to people, it's better to seek services and support and whatever you need to do earlier than later, because you don't want to end up in a major depression. And so if some of these things are happening, absenteeism, if you're not sleeping well, if you're finding that you're barking at your kids more frequently, you know, if you're looking at different kind of alcohol use, again, those should be signs to say, you know, I may need to do some things differently on taking care of me. It could be, again, maybe I have found in talking to people through COVID that one of the things people have given up is exercise and walking and, you know, getting out, because we sort of have had to not do that. So how can you keep that going? At one point, I was going up and down my steps about 20 times a day, which helped, but you know, you got to sometimes get creative. And so where you live in your environment, things that have changed for you, how can you sort of take care of you if you're still working remotely and not going into the office and that stuff to make sure you stay on top of it? Sort of touched on this earlier, the burnout, that's the more advanced state. And I will say with burnout, you're going to feel like you totally shut down. And that's usually typically is when people are thinking about leaving their jobs. So that would be definitely more longer term kind of care that you need to make sure that you can work yourself through that. And next slide, please. So how do we support ourselves and each other? What is critical in preventing and treating compassion fatigue? And these are all things to ask yourself if it's affecting you. What can we do to debrief the ongoing stress? And debriefing is important and it can really help. So accept that the risk is out there. If you work in a close-knit team or if you have staff meetings, it may be a topic to discuss with a big group because probably everybody's feeling it. Recognize the importance of self-care. So what are you doing to take care of yourself? And it could be as little as, like I said, you know, running up and down the steps or walking around the block or, you know, if you've given up things because of COVID or other reasons, is what can you do to regain some of that back that you like to do? Or maybe there's something you've wanted to do that you've never done. This may be the time to do that. Implement a simple but useful diffusing process every 1 to 3 weeks, depending on the need. And you can do this actually with a group of people. So if you have, let's say, 6 to 8 people in your work group, and 4 of you are interested in giving each other support and just processing, you know, you could do that. You could do that over a lunch hour. You could do that first thing in the morning or after work for half an hour. It's not, doesn't have to be a counseling role mode. It's basically just, you know, recognizing we are stressed. Recognizing that it's going to be confidential, whatever is said in the group stays in the group, and just talk about how your week's been and what's been stressful and what's been helpful. I think sometimes we focus so much on the negative and we talk about the negative. Sometimes you have to shift that to say, I've had a really tough week, but this is what I've done and I feel better now. And so getting that support from each other, because everybody sees things different, may be really helpful to do that. So, and if anybody's interested in doing that, I'd be happy to talk you through how to set it up and do it. I have a cold, so excuse me, I'm going to take some water. Next slide, please. Setting some emotional boundaries are going to be important. It's important to set those firm boundaries to protect you, to make sure you're following through. I'm sorry, you guys probably can't hear me right now, but I've not had COVID, but I've sure had a cold over the last 2 weeks, which hasn't been fun. Those masks protect you. And then all of a sudden, when you go back to normal and you get this, it's like regrouping what you need to do. Kleenex, keep them close. So empathy and compassion are really the main pieces that you need to keep close to you and look at How am I going to work with my people? How am I going to work with my staff? And what do I need to do for me? The challenge is really to be open, to be compassionate. Most people that are drawn to this kind of work have that compassion within them. It's part of who they are. And so being empathetic and supportive to others, letting people know when you need the support, I think is really important. And again, sometimes we're not good at doing that. Setting emotional boundaries can help maintain that connection and honoring both you and the other person. And, you know, really looking at how to fulfill the patient's or client's needs and how to make sure that your needs are being met as well. And next slide, please. Authentic and sustainable self-care begins with you. Nobody can do it for you. I think if you feel definitely the workload or the stress of the job or just the times we live in has really impacted you, it's really, you know, being insightful to, you know, how you're feeling here today. What would you like to see change? What goals do you have down the road for yourself? we all have things that we deal with on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, how can we really look at the best way to take care of us? Most people never take the time to sort of see the connection between their jobs and their personal life. But there is a huge impact on both of those pieces. And it's really looking at what you need to do to be okay. So, and it comes from within. It comes from your support system, letting people know what you need. It comes from maybe if you have PTO time in your bank and you haven't taken it because you feel that you can't, you know, take time off from work, that may be something to relook at. Because like I said, an hour on lunch or a day away from the office sometimes is all that you need to re-energize and regroup. So I talk to a lot of people and boy, a lot of them have so much time in their PTO bank that they'll never use it. And so as dedicated as that is for an employee and for an employer to you know, respect, you know, if you're not present and there and able to do the job, it's not going to do you any good nor the client. So it's really taking care of you on those days that you might need a day off. I had a nurse one time that came over to me. She was referred for a job jeopardy and she was an outpatient nurse and yelled at a client, well, patient, and they were in these small cubicles. So when she lost it, you know, everybody in that team heard her and reported her. And she was a nurse, 30 years old, 30 years with the organization, good nurse. And I'd known her for a long time and I was really surprised when she was sitting in my office. but, you know, she said, you know, I got up this morning, I didn't feel great. I shouldn't have went in. And she did. And what happened was she ended up losing it and, you know, got a write-up. So, you know, PTO time is there for you to take care of you. And again, I would urge people that, you know, if you're just really, you know, feeling stretched and stressed, you know, take a day off every now and then. Next screen. So remember to be kind to yourself. Create a routine that really makes you feel like you've got control of your life. And if that slips away for a moment, you know, regroup, take a break, go back to this is what I need to do next. Enhance your awareness with education. Sometimes it's great to take classes, read a book. You know, there's a lot of stuff out there that can help us sort of figure out what we need to do to be okay. Accept where you are on your path. You know, if you're a new employee, if you've been there a few years, if you've been there 20 years, again, you know, that's going to be a different place for you regarding maybe some of the things that you need to do. Understand that those close to you may not be there when you need them most. Maybe there's a supervisor that you've been close with that you feel that you could reach out to and they're in a different spot and maybe there's something going on for them. So it's nice to have, I always say, have a plan A, a plan B, and a plan C. And know who in those plans you can tap if you need to get some support. Sometimes if we, you know, can't reach somebody, a supervisor that's going through some stuff themselves, a close friend that maybe is in another city, You know, how can you make sure that you carve out a time to make sure you actually connect with them? It might not be right away. So that would be part of the plan structure. Plan A is, you know, I get to talk to them right away. Plan B is I can't do it till tomorrow. So what am I going to do in the meantime to take care of you? Next one, please. Exchange information and feelings with people that can validate you. Don't turn to people that you've had difficult relationships with. You know, a lot of times we have a short list on that, and that's okay. But have that as an understanding with that person, that there may be times where you call them in a state of need. Listen to others who are suffering. Again, you don't always have to respond. I think too often we feel like we have to fix it, and you don't. Sometimes people just need to be heard. And just substantiating that you're hearing them, shaking your head, I hear what you're saying, I felt the same way. You know, sometimes those small things can be big for somebody. Clarify your personal boundaries, what works for you and what doesn't. Let people know that it's okay. You don't want to do it in the heat of the moment. So you do it when things are calm and, you know, you're talking maybe how we're working the best as a team and what you need and what they need, and really putting each other's needs out there so you're aware of them is a really good team building experience as well. But it also lets you know when things get, you know, difficult, what you need to do with, you know, coworkers or, you know, how you need to support yourself. Try to communicate verbally what your needs are, express them. Don't do it under, again, a negative message. Try to take positive action to change your environment. Let's say, you know, you feel like where you're working is really stressful and you can't relax. You know, looking at your environment, what can you do? Sometimes it's adding a picture of a family member, a kid, a parent, an animal. Again, I think, you know, sometimes it's those little things that will help us get through the day. Health building activities such as exercise, massage, yoga, meditation, those are all important pieces. Again, I urge people, take breaks, take your lunch hour. As silly sometimes as that seems, it really does make a difference. And health building activities, you know, if you're in the office, is there an opportunity on a break or lunch hour just to walk? So getting out, doing something different, getting the body moving really helps the brain. So next slide, please. Eating healthy foods and drinking plenty of water. Using natural healing products to care for and heal your body. Practicing the art of self-management. You know, maybe there's times you need to say, you know, I have to leave work at 5 today. I can't work till 7. Try to get that healthy support system in place. And, you know, those are your go-to people. Those are the ones you need and reach out to when you have to talk or process what's ever going on. Organizing your life so you can become proactive versus reactive. And I think, again, that's a big step and that's an important step. So if you've been, you know, doing your job for a long time, that's probably going to come easier for some than the newbies. And that's even more ways to how can we support each other. So maybe you have some new people in your group where you can have a conversation and, you know, how to be proactive regarding supporting each other. And next screen. Reserving your life energy for worthy causes, you know, pick and choose your battles. You can't do them all. Living a balanced life, sing, dance, and sit with silence. I saw just recently, I don't know if you guys like to go to Home Goods, but I love Home Goods. They had a little sign that says, this kitchen is for dancing. And I thought, oh my God, I need that in my kitchen, but I don't have any place to put it. I got a really small kitchen, but I thought that's really a good sort of attitude to have. And, you know, waking up every day, trying to think positive around that and music, you know, again, I think that helps us sort of shift some gears. And so look at your life, you know, how can you maybe do some things to feel it's a little bit more balanced than lopsided. And definitely if you feel that, you know, you're in a spot where that depression, that anxiety, or any kind of PTSD is kicking up, you know, I'd be happy to help you look at some options. But it's really important when you look at self-care, it starts with you. I do have a self-care workshop that I've done. I haven't actually done it since COVID started, but if anybody's interested in it, you know, I'd be happy to get, you know, not a lot of people. I like to do it small groups, you know, like four or five people want to do a self-care meeting. We could do that. And it really goes over, you know, again, what you need as an individual to do self-care, how to get more nutrition focused, you know, activity focused. So those are all things to look at too. So, or if you just want the handout, I've got, it's a pretty thick manual, but I'd be happy to share that with whoever. So next slide, please. So resiliency, this is the other piece. You know, all of us are different. And so how I'm resilient and how you're resilient are probably different. And so when you look at resiliency, it's really, you know, how long and when do we bounce back? And so some, you know, geez, they can have a crisis on a Monday and by Wednesday, everything's fine again. But for some, it takes a while and that's okay. But it's being aware of it and it's processing what you need to do to get that resilience to sort of go into full force. So it can be adaption and coping through and, you know, trying to look at what coping skills we need to get through that. And for each person, that's different. So next screen. Some behavior changes following a crisis or intense intervention is a typical response to an extraordinary situation. So when you have something major that happens, it feels like it's never going to change. It's always going to be with you. And it feels intense. And a lot of times people shut down, they get emotional, they get angry. But if you can step back and say, this doesn't happen all the time, this is a rare situation, that's going to help you with that resilience to come back. Behavior changes following a crisis or intense intervention are general temporary. Again, it really sort of plays out with, if you've been through a lot of trauma before, sometimes it takes you longer to get back to where you want to be. The more that you can recognize that early on and get some support and process through that, the better it's going to be. Each person responds in a different way and moves through the experience at his or own pace. So, you know, don't judge other people if they're still hanging on to some of that stuff and you're feeling like you're doing pretty good. We don't know where people have always been. And so it's, again, reaching out and trying to be supportive and empathetic and letting people know they're not alone. And, you know, just understanding that everyone is different when it comes to working through some of this stuff. You know, COVID, I think, is a good example of that. You know, we've got people that have the long-term COVID and they're going to be dealing with it a long time. And we don't want to be insensitive to that because we don't know all that entails for them. And so it's really just trying to be aware of how we're reacting to those situations. Remember, you're not alone. Again, looking at your support system and who you might tap to really have a conversation. Or get some support, or maybe, again, look at a therapist. Sometimes that's the best thing to do is, you know, somebody that will, it's confidential. Isn't shared with anybody. And sometimes it's good just to have that, to be able to put it all out there. It's a sign of strength, not weakness, to ask for help. And I think that's really important. So my cats are fighting. Sorry, I don't know if you can hear them, but they're in the background here making a lot of noise. So again, I think evaluating who you are, what kind of things do you need to be okay? Look at the group around you. Who's your strength? Who can you tap? What do you need to do? Be honest with yourself. And sometimes just what you need is just somebody to talk to and get some feedback from, and that's all good. So next. And that is the end. So does anybody have any questions, any concerns, anything they want to add? Well, you know, we're sort of in the middle of another crisis in our country with this Ukrainian thing. So, you know, I think, again, if COVID has sort of slammed you, and now this, you know, I'm happy to sit down with anybody and talk and give you support. If you're we're working remotely and now you're going back into the office and there's transition issues with that, again, I'm available to help you with that. We are actually going back in the office beginning in April. And, you know, I don't think any of us expected to be out this long. So it's definitely going to be some challenges, I think, going back. I go in as frequently as I can just to make sure that everything's still there. And, you know, it's like I've got files there that I need to put away and, you know, stuff that I've been working on educationally and, you know, trying to remember where all that stuff's at. So it's going to be discombobulated for a while, but it'll be good to get back. So, well, thanks for sharing your hour with me. Hopefully some of this information has been helpful. And again, I'm available if anybody needs to chat. And, you know, what I always tell people is these kind of meetings are okay, but I think the real piece comes like later. Like if you look through the materials either later today or tomorrow or next week, it's going to give you some time to sort of really think about you and where you're at. And again, I'm always available. So.
Right. If people who joined on, if you didn't put your name in the chat box, if you could do that for attendance, I did put a link for a survey. We'd certainly appreciate your feedback on these sessions and maybe future sessions to come. We did record, so we'll be putting this on our HR Weekly site for future reference. And Cheryl will be back with us on April 8th with another topic and another hour spent together. So
great. Thank you. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye-bye.